step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network. Internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-353-6490. That's 1-800-353-6490. Again, 1-800-353-6490.
This is Slickery Trigger for Rebel Road Tactical. With proper care and feeding, your pistol will be ready when you need it, there to save your life. Shouldn't your gear be that good? Whether you need a holster for comfortable everyday carry or a tough-as-nails holster for your next training course, Rebel Road Tactical has what you need. Check us out on the web at rebelroadtactical.com.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, Internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
Well, I'm looking around the coffee shop. Justin Kinney. Wow, how interesting to find you here.
Oh, hello. How are you doing today?
Oh, great. Normally, we're not talking books. We're usually talking bad guys or terrorists or borders.
We usually are, yeah. Usually, we get into terrorism and the international relations issues. But today, we're talking books.
Well, I know you're an author. So, for those who aren't familiar with your work, why don't you give us the basics about your book?
Sure. So it is my very first novel. It came out about last April. It's called Precipice. And I actually write under my middle name, so it's J. Robert Kinney. So if that's how you would find it on Amazon or elsewhere. But it's essentially kind of a small town murder mystery book. You know, there's a trail of murders in this town, and you kind of have a local government agency that takes interest in it for a couple of different reasons. And they start investigating, try to figure out what's going on to solve kind of this dangerous plot that seems to be brewing.
Well, that definitely sounds like it'll fit the bill for a murder mystery.
Absolutely. I love that, the whole genre of murder mysteries, thrillers. And so when I sat down to start writing, that's where I kind of naturally gravitated towards.
Well, you know, my favorite author, Brad Thor, did an interview at the end of one of his audiobooks. And this was my favorite thing about it. He said, don't write what you know. Write what you read. Because you essentially have a mini PhD in that genre.
I have a master's degree in forensic science. So I try to stick to all the crime scene elements, make those as realistic as possible. And then I'm, as you said, I'm kind of working on a PhD where I'm studying mostly terrorism. So I'm starting to build a lot of terrorist elements into future books as well that I'm working on.
Oh, there's a sequel?
There is a sequel that's coming along. I'm probably about 75% through right now. It's slow going, but it's making progress day by day. It'll be out before you know it.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, refresh my memory, traditionally published or self-published?
I chose to self-publish for this first one. I initially, you know, was talking with several agents and publishers, and I was thinking I wanted to go that route, but the further I went down that path, and I had some agents go back and forth with me a little bit about it, I decided self-publishing would be best for this first one for a couple reasons. One, I think you have a lot more control over, you know, the cover design and how you promote it, how you market it, even content. There's a lot more personal control, and I wanted that for my first one. And then two, I write with a little bit of an unusual style, especially for a first-time author, where I like to use multiple points of view. And that's something that a lot of agencies are very hesitant to work with a first-time author on. And I thought it would be best to kind of get out ahead of that and show that this is the style that I like to write in and work from there. And so I haven't decided if I'll continue self-publishing in the future or not. But for the first book, I thought that was probably the best route for me to take.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, I've had both self and traditionally published authors on this show. So, hey, and I have to admit something. In this case, I'm supposed to be calling you Robert on this show, aren't I?
Oh, it's all right. I don't mind. I go by Justin in everyday life, but I write under my middle name, J. Robert, for fiction books.
Well, I will be sure to put J. Robert Kinney on the title. But anyway, I just keep going, why haven't we done this before? And I'm going, ugh. Now, full confession out there, guys, I have read his book. And I, as you just heard me mention, I'm a huge thriller fan. Not so much a mystery fan. Thriller. But this book definitely had enough action to keep me going and enough plot twists, so it was really good. How long did it take you to write the first one?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's actually kind of a long story. The initial idea for it I actually came up with way back in high school. It was probably my senior year of high school, and I think I wrote the first chapter way back then. But at the time, I wasn't big into writing. It was okay. I enjoyed it, but I had other dreams that I was pursuing at the time. And so I went off to college. Things kind of got put on the back burner for a while. It wasn't really until my last year of college and kind of the first year or so out of college that I kind of came back around to it and realized that I wanted to continue this. And so when I finally, settled down and got serious about it, it only took a couple of years or so, but from its initial conception to publishing was probably close to 10 years almost. Which is unusual, but hopefully the second one won't take me nearly that long.
I got a question for you. What made you decide to publish your academic works under Justin Kinney and your fiction book under J. Robert Kinney?
I mean, that's a good question. I think ultimately I kind of decided on a couple things. One was I did want to keep them separate in some capacity, keep my professional academic career distinct somehow from my fiction. And I thought the best way to do that was to change the name slightly. I thought about going with like a pseudonym and making something up entirely, but I didn't particularly like that idea as much either. And so I decided to go with my middle name. And in part, that's a little bit of an homage. My middle name is my father's name. It's also my grandfather's name. So there's a little bit of an homage to family history there as well. But I guess I thought I wanted to keep those two lives kind of separate and distinct, at least on the surface. Now, obviously, in real life, they kind of blend together with some of my interests. But, very soon I'll be publishing in political science. I'll be publishing a couple articles, hopefully in the next year or so, on terrorism. They're a little bit more academic and professional based. And so I just wanted to keep those two distinct.
Well, that's cool, because I know another writer who actually has a PhD. And she actually lists her academic papers, and if you type her name into Google, first thing that comes up is all those academic papers in her personal website.
Yeah, well, it's certainly an unusual kind of conflux of fields. But yeah, very shortly I'll have publishings in kind of both of them. Hopefully they play off one another nicely.
Well, I highly doubt you'll get any forensic details wrong.
I certainly hope not. Obviously, there are certain things you have to tweak a little bit, to keep the interest and to keep. I mean, realistically speaking, a lot of forensics take months to do, and sometimes you have to compress the time frame a little bit to keep the pace of the book. But in terms of any sort of actual details of it, I try to keep that as accurate as I can. From my own knowledge, and if there's any questions I have, I make sure I do my best to look it up and to keep everything as accurate as possible. Because that's one of my pet peeves when I watch a TV show or read a book and things just aren't correct. It really pulls me out of the book, makes it feel very unrealistic.
I've got that same feeling on certain things, because while I'm not a professed or credentialed expert on anything, I know enough just from reading and various things like that I picked up a body of knowledge over the years just from being around it and being exposed, that somebody puts something that's complete rubbish in a book. Like, I'm going to give you an example, and I'm going to tell a small tale out of school because I know the manuscript's been changed. And I'm not going to give the person's name. The head of Canada, the Canadian Prime Minister, comes down to the United States to go to an amusement park at night for the opening of a roller coaster. How implausible does that sound?
Well, it does sound very, very implausible. And that's not to say you can't use it, but you have to be able to justify things like that in ways that make it either sound plausible or you have to change the story. And I think it's really important to get things in your story accurate if it's a factual thing, or plausible if it's something more along those lines. It just has to make sense to your reader. They think this is something that could actually happen.
There are some...
Even in books that's like, say, a fantasy novel, see if you read fantasy, mystery, or something, where obviously elements are fantastical, there still has to be an element that's grounded in something realistic that makes people think, like, if I lived in this world, this is how it would work. You have to still maintain, you know, some element of following the rules that your world sets. Whether you're talking in a fantastical novel or kind of a gritty, realistic mystery novel, you have to follow that. You have to follow those rules of plausibility.
Right, and as you know, I don't write, Justin, but I do a lot of beta reading. And I tripped across this, and I went, okay, in the first 50 pages of this manuscript, we have broken security protocol details. When the Canadian Prime Minister, you know, we've broken the protocols of most security details, we've broken plausibility, and the order of succession of the Canadian government. Okay, no. And I...
And particularly in a case like that, I don't know where this author is from, but if you're not, say, from Canada, you may not know some of these things, but it's important to do a lot of research ahead of time. And I know I do countless amounts of research for my work. You know, if there's something that I don't know about, you know, like you've mentioned, line of succession, I don't know what the Canadian line of succession is, but, you know, I'd have to make sure to look it up to make it as accurate as I could.
I also read, I was beta reading another manuscript, and they had literally moved the Statue of Liberty to Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, if you're going to have something like that, you've got to find a way to justify it in a way that makes sense. I mean, all kinds of stories, you know, do things that on their surface may seem implausible, but you have to find a way to justify it. And that's where it gets tricky. I mean, it's not to say that you can't do that. I mean, maybe you can come up with something. You know, particularly writers tend to be very creative people. Maybe they can come up with a reason to move it to DC. But it has to be something that makes sense to your reader and that wouldn't pull them out of the story and make them question it. Something that would just make them nod and say, okay, that, you know, that makes sense. Even if it's something, you know, kind of out there, like moving the Statue of Liberty.
Well, I think that's a great tip for writers. Make sure you do your research, and if you're going to do something crazy, you better justify it. So
absolutely, and you justify it either through, you know, factual details that you do that you look up in research, or, you know, you have to find some creative, you know, chain of logic that would, you know, lead you to that path.
What other advice would you give to new writers?
I think the biggest thing is, I would say two things. One is just to keep writing. I know, particularly writing this first one, you run into a lot of times where you, I don't want to call it writer's block necessarily, but times where you're not quite sure what to do next. And there's, you get frustrated with that. And I think the biggest thing is just to keep writing. And I think it's important, even if you don't work on that, you know, flip to something else, you know, write something else. You get ideas that will jog your memory. You might get ideas from writing a different book entirely if you have multiple ones you're working on at the same time. You know, so something simple like that. Just keep at it. Don't get discouraged. I think that was probably the biggest thing for me is just staying with it. I tell you, it was very gratifying to see it all finally come together in the end, particularly when there were parts there were times when I wasn't sure that was going to happen. It was definitely a very gratifying feeling.
Oh, I can imagine holding that completed, published book in your hand had to feel amazing.
It did. It was especially for that first one. You don't always realize that it's a possibility until you've completed it. But it's a good feeling. So I would encourage anybody who's interested in getting into writing or wants to start it, just keep persevering with it. You know, it'll come together in the end. It'll be worth it. The other thing I would say too, and this is something I didn't do initially, is save, you know, previous drafts and the previous edits as you go through. There were several times that I would edit something, take it out, and then want to put something back in. later on. And if you don't save previous drafts, you lose a lot of that. And I unfortunately, the first couple times I went through, I didn't save all of those previous drafts, and I lost material that I had to kind of recreate later on. But nowadays I try to save everything, whether it's a really poor piece of writing that I was just trying something out, I save that in a file because you never know what might spark an idea later on.
So basically make yourself a writing outtakes file.
Yes. Kind of like a bloopers, like a bloopers reel. Things, just save everything, even if it's something you don't think you're going to use now. Maybe it's a B storyline that you were planning to use in this book and you decide not to, save it. Put it to the side. Maybe you'll use it in another book down the road. Maybe it's something that will spark an idea, even in this book about, a different storyline. It's never a good idea, at least in my opinion, to delete a lot of those things, because that's work that you put time and effort into, and you never know what might come out of that down the road.
Another author friend of mine had a really interesting idea, and she's also self-published. She took some of her writing outtakes, scenes that she loved. They were polished and edited and all pretty, but she had to take them out of the manuscript. And she used them as blog posts and promotional material when her book came out.
That's a great idea. I like that a lot. It's very, very painful to have to cut something that you put a lot of time and effort into. And if you can use that in another capacity, that's a wonderful idea.
I definitely agree with your idea, the outtakes reel, because I've talked to various other writers, and I've heard the weeping and gnashing stories. Because like I said, I'm not a writer, but I love reading. I absolutely gotta have my books and my coffee. Hey, gotta have some fun in life, Justin. Gotta do it. So,
absolutely.
All right, so we've discussed writer's block. It took you 10 years. You started this in high school. That's incredible. I know a lot of high school students who wouldn't have even still had that material.
Well, I was very lucky that I had managed to save this little bit somewhere on one of my hard drives, and I managed to come across it years later. Like I said, it took 10 years. I wasn't writing the whole time, though. It was kind of in and out. I'd put it aside, then I'd pick it up, do a little editing, add a little bit to it, then I'd put it aside for a while. But it wasn't until much later that I got serious about sitting down to finish it.
So can I ask, how's the next book coming? Are we first draft, second draft?
I'm on the first draft. Although I do a little differently than some people. I like to edit kind of as I go along too. So it's probably draft 1.5. But I'm probably about 75% or so through the first draft. I'm far enough into it that I know how it's going to end, which I often don't when I start a book. But I'm far enough in that I've pretty much plotted out the last several chapters. So I'm getting close to having a full draft put together. I'm hopeful to have that out before too long, and then start diving into some of the editing and filling in any plot holes that I might have overlooked in the first draft. But it's getting close to having an entire first draft complete. I'm excited about it. It's a little bit bigger in scope than the first one, a little bit more terrorism related, a little bit more international related than this first one, which was a little bit more small town mystery. But I'm excited about where it's going, and it's opening up a lot of doors too for even future books down the road, I think.
Well, that is absolutely, you've got me wanting to read it. Like I said, I do a lot of beta reading, Justin.
Well, I'll definitely let you know when it's finally put all put together.
Oh, like I said, I can't wait, because I loved Precipice.
Well, I appreciate it. I know you said you're not a big mystery fan, but you're big on thriller. I tried to kind of combine those two genres, because they're two that I love a lot. I read a lot of the Sherlock Holmes stuff, the classic mystery So I'm a big into the thriller genre as well. It's a lot more suspenseful. And so I tried to kind of combine elements of both of them into Precipice.
All right. So for someone writing either a mystery or a thriller or something with forensics in it, what are some resources for where they could get information?
Well, I think there's a couple different ways obviously the internet is full of all kinds of places you can go.
Is there a particular website that you think has a lot, or, you know, is Wikipedia actually accurate on this stuff? Obviously, no one ever wants to use Wikipedia as the final source. But the interesting thing about Wikipedia, they give you their sources at the bottom.
Yeah, you know, I also teach at a university, and I always tell my students, you know, don't use Wikipedia as a source. But the truth is, Wikipedia is a very good starting point in a lot of places. It's not something you ever want to cite, but it gives you a good enough overview, and it will often be able to direct you to primary sources. I use Wikipedia all the time. I don't cite it for anything, but you know, you scroll on to the bottom and it lists a bunch of primary sources, usually on most articles. And I think that's a really good starting point for really any research. Again, it's probably not reliable enough that you would cite anything from it directly or quote anything from it. But it's a great overview of a topic, and it can direct you to places that would be very reliable. Beyond Wikipedia, I know a site that I've used on occasion is, it's crimesceneinvestigator.net, something to that effect. I think it's crimesceneinvestigator.net, but there's dashes. It's crime-scene-investigator.net. And that has a fair amount of content that's kind of all about forensic science and how, you know, what the crime scene response guidelines are and procedures, some of the evidence collection procedures. It also is, you know, if you're interested in going into the field, it has a lot of employment opportunities as well. So it's kind of a multifunctional website, but it does have a decent amount of information if you're looking for kind of the basics of it. Beyond that, I'd encourage talking to somebody who's done this or who has studied it. There's nothing quite like being able to talk to a person in real life. A lot of times what you read on websites is kind of the official procedure, but you talk to somebody in real life and that's not quite how it always goes down in the field. So I'd recommend making connections, talking to people, using friends, family, friends of friends as resources. There's nothing that quite beats that human interaction.
Yeah, I love talking to people, Justin. Does that surprise you?
Not at all.
Come on, two radio shows? I think my gift for gab is kind of well established here. So those are some great tips, because I know, and I've seen this everywhere, you know, there's the official textbook version, and then there's the, all right, when we're really doing it, we do this, and this. We tweak it just that little bit.
There's all kind of little tips that somebody who actually has done it can give you that kind of go beyond the guidebook answers. But, you know, the guidebook is obviously a great place to start if you don't know somebody, particularly if you're looking maybe at the federal level. I know the FBI has an archive page that's all about forensic science, and it kind of talks through the processing of a scene and everything as well. So if you don't know somebody in the field, you know, those things are great places to start as well. But you really can't beat, you know, having somebody to talk to who can give you the kind of ins and outs of what it's really like on the ground.
All right. Now, here in this country, we got 50 states. Are crime scene techniques kind of standardized across the country, or are they hugely different, or is there pretty much a standard?
That's a great question, and it really depends on what aspect of forensic science you're talking about. There are certain fields that are much more reliable than others, but that said, there is no national standard. There's no like forensic science organization that sets a national standard. So you can see variation from state to state. And that has caused some problems when you're actually talking about prosecuting somebody, particularly if they cross state lines, you're kind of dealing with two different sets of standards. And we've seen, you know, even issues running, we've even run into some issues on on topics that are generally pretty well accepted in courts, like say fingerprints. You know, people think of fingerprints as being the, you know, the end all, or, you know, only a step below DNA, but we've seen cases where you have expert analysis done by two different people, and they come up with completely different answers, even though they're both well trained, because there's an element of subjectivity in a lot of forensic science. So there are some problems with lack of standardization across the country. But again, it kind of depends on which aspect of forensic science you're talking about. Some do a lot better than others.
So would you say like DNA results would be, is that pretty much, it's got standard set procedures, even the fingerprints?
Yeah, I would say DNA is probably right near the top. And then, you know, all the way down to maybe like bite analysis at the bottom. You know, bite analysis is very, very non-standard and very subjective. And then, you know, even things like lie detector tests, you know, those sorts of things are sometimes so unreliable that they're not even allowed in courts of law at times. But again, it kind of depends on where you are and who you're talking to. And the other thing too, it varies drastically if you're in a big city that has the resources versus a small rural town. So if you're writing a book and your crime scene is set in this little podunk town in the middle of nowhere, they're not going to have the same resources that you would if you had a murder that took place in Washington, D.C. And the standards that they might meet and the technologies that they would have and the training that the individual person might have could be vastly different.
Those are great points. They are. So, and I hope those points help other writers. So what else? So it took 10 years. So did you hire an editor or did you do all the editing yourself?
Neither, technically. I didn't hire an official editor, so I did most of it myself. I did have a handful of friends, family members who were kind of beta readers for me, and they helped with a lot of the editing as well. By and large, though, I did most of it myself. I've always, you know, been fairly good at editing just in general. I've helped edit other people's work as well. So I felt pretty confident in my abilities, but there's always things that you miss when it's your writing. Just from a psychological perspective, you know, they say you know what you meant to say, so therefore your mind reads it as that, but it may not always come across that way to another person. So even though I did most of the editing myself, I made sure to have, you know, a couple other people read through the work ahead of time. You know, I had, you know, a couple friends, family member, and then I joined a like an editing group that I met online, and we all kind of helped edit each other's work. So I pitched, you know, basically chapter by chapter, you know, over, you know, probably 9 months or so, you know, week by week, you know, to help have either four other people in the group, and they would all read through it and offer suggestions. You know, some of it I agreed with, other parts I liked it better the way I had it, but they provided another set of eyes, kind of look over it and tell me what they thought, and to help catch any grammatical mistakes or typos that my eyes glossed over.
So you used the peer review method even in your fiction writing.
I did, and it was a very good, helpful, cheap way to do it, because you're not paying somebody necessarily with cash. You're paying them in exchange of, you know, services, because I'm helping edit their work as well, and so you both benefit, and it was very helpful and very useful for me as well.
Oh, that's awesome. It really is. All right, what other little tips and tricks do you have hidden up your sleeve? You got to have one more for us, Justin. You got one more?
Yeah, let me think for just a second.
Well, Justin, while you're doing some thinking, we will take a commercial break and be back with you on the other side.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-353-6490. That's 1-800-353-6490. Again, 1-800-353-6490.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity.
For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
And thank you for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. Now back with author J. Robert Kinney, a.k.a. Justin.
Well, you know, I think when you're talking authors, there's often two types of authors that people fall into, two categories. You know, the people who kind of plot everything out, every step by step, you know, detail by detail, chapter by chapter, almost like an outline form. And then you have people like myself that don't do that, and they kind of write by the seat of their pants to an extent. You know, they're called the plotters and the pantsers. And I tend to be much more of a pantser. And while that can introduce a lot of difficulties, for me, what that forces me to do is really know my characters very well. Because the way my book goes, it becomes dependent on how well I know my characters. Because if I know them inside and out like they're my best friends, I know what decisions they're going to make, you know, essentially before they do. And my book is guided very realistically in that sense by decisions that the characters would make. I find if you plot things too much, you end up having your characters being forced to make decisions that are kind of out of character for them. But I like to let the characters guide the story, rather than let some sort of outline or plot guide the story. And while there's probably a good balance in there between both of them, I find that being able to know my characters so well, at least for me, provides a better, more compelling story than if I had outlined the entire thing up front.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world, Justin. I mean, believe it or not, you know, my favorite author, Brad Thor, I can tell you all kinds of things about his alter ego, as I'm going to call it, Scott Harfath. I can sit down and tell you where he lived and when he lived there and what his resume would look like and all those things. So it actually makes sense. And I'm sure Brad Thor can tell me 1,000 things I don't know because he's never let them out about that character. But that makes sense to make the story character-driven so that your characters aren't backed into a corner to do something just because this piece of paper that isn't your manuscript says it's time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I assume Thor does this as well. A lot of authors do. But the way I do that is I keep a character database of every character that ever pops up, you know, every little detail about them. So that if I do have a question, I can go back and take a look. But it allows for my stories to be much more character-driven than plot-driven. And I find that to be compelling. I mean, your book has to have a plot, too. So there's certainly a balance. But being character-driven, I think, is a more compelling story for an average reader because they like to get to know the characters and get to feel like that they're friends with the characters as well.
So do you ever sit down and, you know, kind of stare at that character profile and have a cup of coffee with that character and have a conversation with them going, what would you do if?
Not quite that formal, but I certainly have sat down with characters and tried to kind of plot out little bits about them, you know, things that will never ever show up in the books, but things that may, you know, have kind of behind the scenes influence. And so I've definitely sat down and, you know, I've, like I said, with this character database, I've kind of created a bunch of little tidbits and details that may never ever become relevant, but it helps me to know them better.
I've heard that I've heard people refer to that as the iceberg theory. The 10% of the iceberg is above the waterline, but you have to know,
and the rest you can't see.
Whole, and that's the published book. So 90% of the iceberg's below the waterline. So the reader only gets to see about 10%.
I'd say that's probably pretty accurate. Very close to that number. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that I think helps drive the novel and make it compelling for the reader that the reader will never see or even know about.
All right.
And frankly, even when you're plotting too. I mean, like I said, I plot little bits here and there. I know like what's going to happen in the last few chapters of the sequel, but even then, like the details that I know about what's going to happen aren't necessarily the exact same details that will pop up and I'll tell on the page. And I think that again makes for a much richer story.
Well, those all sound like very good advice. I think you've given some some writers some awesome advice and hints and tips, because the world of forensic science is something that most of us don't know anything about, except what we see on TV or read in books.
I think that's true. And a lot of times what you see on TV and read in books isn't always accurate, which is partly why I'm so concerned with making sure mine is as accurate as I can make it.
Well, that sounds like a very outstanding and amazing goal, especially considering, well, you have a degree in it. So, as I do with all my authors, why don't you give out your social media information?
Sure. So I have a Twitter account. Actually, I have two Twitter accounts. One for me that's a little more personal. One is an author. So the author one is just J. Robert Kinney. The personal one is Justin_Kinney. I also have a Facebook author page under J. Robert Kinney. And then I'll go ahead and give this out as well. If you know anyone has any questions about me or my work, I have an email address as well that's specifically for my authoring, and that's just jrobertkinney@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or talk to anybody about the writing process or forensics.
Well, that sounds amazing, Justin. And I think you may be getting some emails with an offer like that, because I've become friends with some writers, and how I tripped over a bunch of these writers was I have a website, jessiescoffeeshop.com. You know, I've got my social media too, and I put up a chat room on the website during NaNoWriMo, and they've all become fans of the show because, you know, it kind of pops up on the sidebar where their chat room is.
Right. Yeah.
So you maybe and there's the chat room. I intended to take it down after November, but I didn't. I left it there. And these crazy wordsmiths from all over the world are still occasionally popping up in there. So I've
good.
It's been interesting having a bunch of wordsmiths hanging around my website.
Well, it's a tight-knit community. Writers are I've found other writers are frequently very willing to help others, pursue that same goal. We all kind of are in it together in a sense. I think that's a really great thing. I've been very pleased to find find out how willing writers are to help one another.
It does seem like there's a wonderful writing community out there. All right. Well, I think I'm going to pour myself a cup of coffee and settle down with a book. And I will catch up with you later, Justin.
That sounds good.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.